Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Trump just killed NIH and federal research grants to Harvard and other universities with DEI programs. The deadline has passed, and all DEI offices shall close. And DEI at institutions of higher education with endowments over $1 billion, all of that must come to an end. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here today. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. We'll talk about all of this as the show goes on today. It is our happy hour brought to you by the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. And I'm very, very happy that President Donald Trump may release, finally, once and for all, the JFK files. The question is, what will we learn in the JFK files? Well, there's a guy who's written a lot on this and many other subjects, and he joins me now on Talk Radio 1210 WPHG, not to talk about this necessarily, but to talk about other things. And that, of course, is the one and only Gerald Posner. Gerald, how you doing, my friend?
Good, Rich. Great to be with you. You're the first person I've spoken to since the deadline went into effect for the end of DEI programs, so it's fantastic news.
You see that? Isn't that great? It's great news. Absolutely. And I'm thrilled. Really am. And the latest, of course, that President Trump put out saying now that agency heads must take measures to ensure and deter DEI at institutions of higher education. DEI will be removed from all contracts. Contractors must certify that it does not operate any programs promoting DEI. So he's going all in here, Gerald Posner.
It's fantastic. You know, just think, Rich. We're watching the resurrection of meritocracy. People are going to be getting jobs again, positions, promotions. They're going to be running departments based upon merits, whether they're really qualified or not, not just because somebody wants to take an end-of-year picture of the staff and make sure that it meets some diversity standards and ticks off virtue signaling boxes. This is really one of the most important of these early, together with his executive order on there are only two biological sexes. This is a sea change in the way that the left has had us thinking for so long.
Yeah, and the left, of course, always trying to divide us, right? And then use that division to advance its own agenda, which is socialism. And that hopefully will come to a screeching halt. And the American people want it. You know, it's time. They want to move past this division. They really do.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, it's interesting that when the hardcore, the real progressive, the squad and those who align with the squad and have been behind all of these DEI and gender programs and everything else, if they won't let go of it, if they refuse to, if they won't move to the middle for their own party, then they have learned no lesson from the last election, and they'll continue to lose in the future because American voters have told them this is not what they want. Parents have told them this is not what we want. Now, if they're tone deaf, they can't read the room, then they'll continue to lose elections.
Yeah, they will. And that's why President Trump did so well with black men and with Latino voters. And that's why poll after poll shows people are done with this division and this nonsense. And yet the left is still doing what they're doing because they don't learn any of their lessons. So you, Gerald Posner, award-winning investigative journalist, author of several books, your latest being Pharma, Greed, Lies, and the Poisoning of America. You have an article that you've written, Hitler, Musk, and the Art of the Smear. It reminds me of that South Park episode where they said, everybody I don't like is Hitler. But there's a reason why the left keeps doing this, and it's absolutely pathetic.
It really is. I mean, look at they for so long in terms of the commentary, and I'm not just talking about in social media and somebody putting it up who has, you know, 5,000 followers or that. In terms of officials in the Democratic Party, the legacy press, the far left press, the NPR and Washington Post, the Atlantic, other magazines, they were talking and making comparisons about Trump being Hitler before the election. And then there were two attempts to assassinate him. So you call somebody Hitler long enough, and you're going to push somebody, and I wrote a piece about this in the Wall Street Journal, you're going to push somebody who's already unstable off the edge, and that's what's happened. So I thought maybe after the attempted assassinations on Trump, the left would tone it down. Boy, that didn't last very long. And
yeah,
you're absolutely right. This is them. This is AOC taking, you know, Elon Musk the other day in his exuberance at this rally right after the inauguration. And he gives, you know, hits his heart and then puts out his arm to the audience. And what does she do? She turns it into a Sieg Heil Nazi salute. And that doesn't just end with her and her 20 million views that she gets, but it's picked up by the BBC, it's picked up by NPR and others. This is really something that I think will continue to put the Democratic Party and the left in the hole, because people do not want this. We see it as insane. It's just not true. And the more they try to push it, it looks like it shows their desperation.
And the art of the smear, this idea of smearing people, it's all about trying to destroy their credibility so that you're afraid to agree with them. Because, I mean, who wants to agree with somebody who's Hitlerian?
That's right. And, you know, Rich, you hit the nail on the head. Let me tell you, they used to use the word, you know, transphobic for somebody to try to shut you up if you were talking about gender and you would say there are only two sexes. Yeah, I wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal about the dangers of puberty blockers years ago. My wife talked about how it wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal about how the medical industry was, you know, using these gender neutral terms. People called us transphobic. Okay, if you said something else, they called you racist. It was a way to close you down, cancel culture, make you say, oh, I don't want to talk about that if I'm going to be called that. Now, the new thing is to call you far right. Everything is an extreme far right thing, which then implies there's some level of Hitler or fascism. And I say in the piece that I wrote, you know, that 40% in a recent poll of people under the age of 29 get their news from TikTok. Maybe the other 60% aren't getting news at all. But even the TikTok crowd knows Hitler, Nazis, those are bad people.
Yeah.
So the left just keeps throwing it up like mud, hoping that some of it sticks and people will say, oh, my God, they're like Hitler. I don't want to have anything to do with them.
And fascism, you know, what always amazes me is that, I mean, I learned early on in my political science classes that fascism was a strong centralized government. And that's the opposite of what a guy like Trump wants, where he's trying to, I mean, literally, he's trying to take power away from his own branch of government. So, I mean, you know, that's the exact opposite of fascism. Yet, I guess we don't teach these terms and people don't understand them because they throw that F word around all the time.
No, you're absolutely right. And as a matter of fact, it's so interesting that, you know, you're talking about, you're answering them with reality and facts and a little bit of knowledge. And you would think that that would shut them up, but it doesn't, because they ignore all of that. They just take the term and they use it and they throw it around. And it's really remarkable to me. I mean, you know, the Harvard Political Review, which is pretty left wing, had an article. Trump was in, just been inaugurated and was in office for a few hours the other day when they ran an article about his rhetoric echoes Hitler. There was nothing in his inauguration speech that echoed Hitler. I can tell you, it's just made up. And the same thing being done with Musk. But the sad thing on this is that the legacy press is out of touch. We know that. They're falling further behind all the time. And to the extent that they picked up on this story about Elon Musk, and they're talking about how his salute sparks fury from Europe's left wing and things like that in Political and Rolling Stone and the New Republic, they just are further diminishing every day how anybody could look at them and have any respect for what their journalism is.
Yeah, and you know, and that's the thing. They've lost so much ground. I mean, CNN's laying off people today. That news just broke a short time ago. I think people have completely given up on them. I mean, we realize now that they are not. They're not journalists. You are. You are an investigative journalist. These are people who are there pushing a narrative. They're not interested in getting to the truth of things. They're not interested in doing investigations. And I'll prove that. I'll prove my thesis just by saying that none of them were able to write anything about Joe Biden's very obvious cognitive decline. In fact, they all joined in advancing the government's propaganda that Joe Biden was fine. And not a single journalist in corporate media, now they're all acting like, oh, well, we should have done a better job of that. That's your job. Your job is to challenge the government and question whether or not the president has all his faculties, not go out there and lecture me that I'm falling for cheap fakes.
Yeah, absolutely right. And as a matter of fact, you know, it's so fascinating. The time when you show your worth as a journalist is when you cover the story and you break it before it's news to anybody else, not after the fact. Joe Biden, you know, had to drop out of the race because of it. We all saw his cognitive decline in that debate appearance. And then, of course, everybody starts to say, well, you know, we should have covered this more because the story was already out. Then when the Wall Street Journal did have a piece that had about 16 or 17 different sources in it, and a number of them were anonymous because they didn't want their identity out before the election, before the Biden's disastrous debate appearance, they got pushback from every other end of the mainstream media. The media said, oh, that's wrong. You're doing a hit piece on Biden. It's not true. The White House came out and said, you know, we've never seen him sharper. So, the story is not only the cover-up of his cognitive decline, but I want to know who was running the government. And yeah, we have all our guesses of Sullivan and Blinken and everybody else, but we need to know. And that's the story still to be found out. It can be discovered. It's not going to be next week or the week after. Need a little bit of distance until you can get access to some of these people who are around the circle. But there's a story to tell about, talk about loss of democracy, threat to democracy, what they always said about Trump. Boy, we lost the democracy in terms of the person elected to the office wasn't running the government, but this unelected cabal who was secretly running it inside the White House got away with it.
Yeah, no kidding. Gerald Posner's with me, award-winning investigative journalist and author of books including Why America Slept, Secrets of the Kingdom, Killing the Dream, Motown, Hitler's Children, Mengele, The Complete Story, and a fiction book called The Bio Assassins. There's another book you wrote, which I've read. And it's funny because I, you know, back in college, I remember arguing with my buddy Greg Renoff, who would become one of my great friends. He's a historian. He's a history professor. We would always argue about the Kennedy assassination. And in years later, he said to me, he goes, you got to read Case Closed by this guy, Gerald Posner. All right. He finally, once and for all, settles the case about the Kennedy assassination. And, you know, to have you on the show, and I've always talked to you about this, and every year on the anniversary of Kennedy's assassination, you talk about this. You always wind up tweeting about this. President Trump says he's going to release the remaining files of the CIA, the classified files. You are still convinced, though, and you've done the analysis, you've done the research, that there's nothing there that it's going to prove that JFK acted alone and that's the end of it, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything in there that's going to change that conclusion. There's no bad use of a term. There's no smoking gun document sitting in there in which we're all going to say, oh, my God, there, that's the conspiracy. I think that we're going to find out bits for history that are going to be very interesting. And, you know, what did the CIA know about Oswald's unstable trip to Mexico City 6 weeks before? And did they realize that he was that much on the edge, that he was that unstable? So there's stuff in there to get, but there's nothing that's going to turn the case upside down. And I'm hoping that Trump does do it. You know, I was hoping that he would do it in 2017 when it first came up. And then I was hoping that Biden would do it afterwards. It's time to have this out. And RFK is certainly sort of, you know, I think said to him, it's time. I think he will get them out. And as a matter of fact, I've almost had some whiplash on Twitter today. I mean, I would see a post from somebody that would say, the JFK files are coming out momentarily. And I'd say, oh, my God. And then somebody else would say, no, they're a day or two away.
Did we lose Gerald? Did we lose him?
Yeah, he did. I'll call him back.
Oh, okay. That's all right. Tell him we had a run anyway, but I want to thank him for joining us on the show, and he's a terrific guy. And you should follow Gerald Posner, by the way, on social media. He's terrific, award-winning journalist at Gerald Posner, and we will have him on the show again very, very soon. It is our happy hour brought to you by the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, and I'm happy that hopefully the JFK files will be released, and hopefully the CIA didn't whack Gerald Posner since he was hoping that the files are going to be released. Least. Let's hope. Let's hope he's okay. Let's just find out that he's okay. Just give me confirmation that he's okay, that the CIA didn't take him out, all right? 855-839-1210. You can book your winter stay at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, just simply by going to grandhotelcapemay.com. And it's never too early to book that summer vacation. Get the best rooms now at the best rates now. grandhotelcapemay.com. I want to get to some of the calls that have been patiently holding, including my buddy Preston in Nashville, who joined us last time we were at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. Preston, you made a long trip, and I thank you for that, my brother. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you feeling, Rich?
I'm hanging in there, buddy. I every day gets a little bit easier and better. I thank you for asking.
Absolutely. Hey, you know, we all surmised this last 4 years that Biden wasn't running the country. My question is now, these confirmations have not taken place yet, except for the Secretary of State. Who is actually running these cabinet positions before? Who is our AG before Pam Bondi takes over? Who's running the FBI before Kash Patel takes over? It's concerning to know that, to figure out, ask, you know, who's running these things.
Well, they are by essentially there's acting directors for the moment, but they really are kind of calling the shots, and everything is being run through the administration. That's the good news. And people that want to keep their jobs are going to do what President Trump and ultimately Pam Bondi and Kash Patel want, so that they're invited to stay and they don't lose their jobs. That's kind of how it works in Washington. So president will try to pick somebody who is close, who could be trusted within the agency, appoint them as an acting director, or acting this or acting that. And then, you know, that person will hopefully do a good job and be invited to stay when the actual person's confirmed. So there you go.
Okay. Well, we're pulling for all the nominees.
Yeah, I am too. And I hope that they get them confirmed as quickly as possible, particularly Pete Hegseth and Kash Patel, Tulsi Gabbard. They hopefully we get them all in. You know, Preston, that's the hope, right?
Yep. Well, thanks for taking my call, Rich.
A pleasure to hear from you, buddy. And next time you come up, we're going to try to get you a Zioli Army beanie, because I know you really want one. You and Justin both need them. So
appreciate that. Thanks very much, Rich.
All right, Preston, you got it. Joe is in Jenkintown. Joe, you're on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. How you doing?
Rich, how the heck are you? Listen, I love you, man. I go along with everything you say, but the real reason I'm calling it's because I'm an RN. And I hear about you joking around about giving your medicine. And I want you to know, it's very serious. Stop joking around about it. I'm not kidding.
I know.
That might be this and that might be a that. It's not true. I'll come out there whenever you need it and give it to you the right way. it's that serious, man. You're laughing, but we need you. Just like they needed me, I volunteer for the Abington co-op, get out the vote and all that. And I talk to people in the mailing, which I didn't want to do. And it all worked out. And we got to make sure you stay healthy, man. I saw you yesterday on television. You're important. I know you don't feel that way. You're not a big, important guy, but you're important to us. And please, please, be careful. Well, have your producer get my number. I'll come out there. I'll give you the stuff, however often it is. And keep going, man. Thank you, God. Thank you for Trump, and thank you for you. I mean it from the bottom of my heart.
Well, Joe, thank you, buddy. That means a lot to me. It really does. Thank you so much for the call and for your kind words and your wishes. I appreciate it, buddy. You have a great day, Joe. Thank you so much. And I look, I make jokes, a gallows humor, a son of a cop, and that's how I get through life. I have a dark sense of humor sometimes, and I make jokes, but I want you to know I am following all the doctor's orders. Dr. Malilly lectured me yesterday at Cooper, And he told me, he said, if he has to put me in a cast, to quote him, up to my ass, he will do it after my next surgery happens. I am, and my wife is on top. She, you know, I'm taking it seriously. I use all my antibiotic wipes, keep my PICC line clean, taking my antibiotics. I appreciate your concern, though. Don't worry. I know it's serious. I know. Staph infections are nothing to joke around about. And, you know, and I saw the doctor yesterday, and he told me that it looks good. It looks like the foot is healing nicely. It does not seem like it's spreading. I have another appointment with him on Tuesday. He's going to take my stitches out. Then we'll schedule a date for the next surgery. And then I have an appointment with infectious disease on Thursday, and hopefully they'll give me the all clear that I can stop the IV antibiotics, and hopefully we're good. So I'm drinking lots of water because I got to stay hydrated for my kidneys because these antibiotics are very harsh on the kidneys. And I am, with the exception of having a Peroni the other night after Jimmy's show, I'm staying off the booze, back to dry January, and no cigars for the time being either. That's mostly because it's too cold to go outside and smoke, and my wife would literally kill me if I ever lit a cigar in this house. So there you go. But no, I appreciate that. It's very kind of you, and thank you for that. Let's see. Steve's in Glenside. Steve, you're on Talk Radio 1210. What's going on?
Hey, Rich. Thanks for taking my call. Wishing you a continued speedy recovery. So I had a plan for preventing AI from taking over the world.
Okay.
Step one is focus AI on individualized education for students so that they can get summarized versions of the lessons that they can learn in their own speed, adapted for them. So regardless of background or income or anything like that, they'll all be able to get a good education. Step two, wait for the teachers' union to make it illegal. Problem solved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there you go. Very nice. I like how you tied that in.
All right. Have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it. My emotional support rhinoceros. Very good. this is a flashback to 2023. Trump vowed to sign an executive order dismantling Biden's gender policies. And of course, he did it. He kept his word, kept his promise. He did it. Cut four.
10, 15 years ago, could you imagine even talking about these subjects? Think of that. Gender affirming care. It's not going to be a problem. As soon as we get in, it'll all be ended. I'll sign a new executive order instructing every federal agency to cease all programs that promote the concept of sex and gender transition at any age.
Protecting women from radical gender ideologies.
Ooh.
There you go. He did it. I mean, this is what it's about, right? It's about following through. And on that end, ICE is already going at it. Let's cue up cut number two. Tom Homan, in the last 24 hours, ICE is already going after some of the most serious criminals out there. Cut two.
What would a person have to do to get a visit from ICE?
For it to be in the country illegally, first of all, I mean, there's nothing in the immigration law that says you got to be convicted of a serious crime to be removed under the INA. So if you're in the country illegally, ICE can visit you. But right now, as we said repeatedly, and the president trusts me clear, we're concentrating on the worst first, the public safety threats, the national security threats. And just yesterday, in the last 24 hours, ICE arrested over 308 serious criminals. Some of them were murderers. Some of them were rapists. Some of them raped a child. Some were a sexual assault of a child. So ICE is doing their job, and they're prioritizing just as the president said they would. So the ICE is performing excellent right now out in the field, and they're going to continue every day.
There you go. Good. I mean, that's what has to happen here. You know, we gotta have them do their job and let them do their job. And they're starting with the criminals, and that's what we want, right? We want to get rid of these criminals. It's very important that we do it. Very, very important. It matters to the American people. It matters to all of us. And on that note, by the way, I want to share with you, they have some news on one of the home burglaries of an NFL player. There were a string of these that were happening. This is a report from Fox News with Alexis McAdams, cut number three.
So this is an intriguing story and development. You got four suspects in Ohio now under arrest in connection to the burglary at the home of Cincinnati Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow. All of them are Chilean nationals here in the U.S. illegally. For more, Alexis McAdams is to report on this now. What you find out, Alexis?
Well, like you said, I think a lot of people were wondering when there was going to be an arrest in this case. It took about a month, but the Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow was on the field. He wasn't even at his house when police say four migrants broke into his home. And now those men, originally from Chile, are behind bars. Police say this is the group, okay, part of a South American gang. They range in age from 22 to 38 years old. Those are their mugshots. The four are now facing burglary charges after police pulled them over earlier this month and found some of Burrow's things that were stolen from his house. Like what? Well, an old LSU shirt and a Bengals hat. On December 9th, during Monday Night Football, police responded to Burrow's home. Listen to this.
We do have a shattered window into the bedroom. The bedroom has been ransacked.
Yeah, ransacked, things were taken, and they walked right out of that house. It wasn't just the Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow's house in Cincinnati, Ohio. The Ohio Attorney General says these men are behind a string of burglaries targeting multi-million dollar homes. So what's their alibi? Well, the migrants told police they were in Ohio to see the snow. But investigators say one of their cell phones pinged a cell tower right in Burrow's neighborhood, showing they were in the area at the time of burglary. So try to get out of that. Burrow says it's not just about what was taken. So the NFL did issue a security alert back in November, telling their athletes that an organized and skilled criminal ring was targeting their houses because they knew when they'd be out of town because they could watch them on TV. After this, both Kansas City Chiefs stars Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce had their homes burglarized just a month earlier. So
No arrests in Kansas City so far, right?
No arrests in Kansas City.
I was reading about this. There are multiple investigations. Mm-hmm. They were targeting rich people, not just athletes, known as tourist burglars.
Yeah.
Like they come to the U.S. on a tourist visa.
Yeah, well, we know, too, right, from being in New York, how many crimes have happened here linked to migrant gangs. And they're saying that's the same thing. It's just as Dana was saying. We didn't know so much about the Chilean gangs. So it's interesting on that.
I think the Louis Vuitton bag might have been a tip off.
I think so. Maybe. Maybe.
More to come. Alexis,
thanks,
thank
Alexis.
You.
Thank
Alexis.
You.
That, of course, is Dana Perino and Bill Hemmer. I was on their show yesterday. You might have caught that on America's Newsroom with Dana Perino and Bill Hemmer. And I was on there longer than Alexis McAdams was, by the way, for the record. So, just pointing that out. In fact, did we ever play the audio and video of me on Fox News yesterday? I don't think we ever did we?
No, I have the audio. Just give me a second to pull it up.
Nah, we need the video. We'll do it tomorrow. Put it on the sheet for tomorrow. But you do have Caroline Levitt saying they're sending troops to the border, right?
Yeah, this happened, I guess, about 30, 40 minutes ago. It was recent.
Okay, let's take a listen.
I believe it was Reuters who broke the news that President Trump signed an executive order that's 1,500 additional troops to the United States southern border. This comes off of his day one action, as I just talked about, on Fox News to direct the Department of Defense to make Homeland Security a core mission of the agency. This is something President Trump campaigned on. The American people have been waiting for such a time as this for our Department of Defense to actually take Homeland Security seriously. This is a number one priority of the American people, and the president is already...
Now, of course, Trump has designated Mexican drug cartels as being foreign terrorist organizations, which could allow the use of military force against these groups, by describing migrants, drug traffickers and smugglers as invaders threatening U.S. security. The administration could possibly circumvent the Posse Comitatus law, of course, which prohibits using the troops in law enforcement capacity. And look, I never really thought Posse Comitatus would be that big of an issue here since we're talking about the border. I think Posse Comitatus is much more about using the troops for law enforcement purposes than military internally in the United States of America. President Trump's talking about sending the military to the border. And also, of course, now an executive order that the president signed describing border threats normally left to law enforcement agencies as an invasion, justifying a military response. I think it's perfectly appropriate for a country to use its military to secure its border. Most countries around the world do use their military to secure their borders. So, I mean, that's not a big thing. I don't really think that it should be that controversial. That's different than having the United States military going door to door. That's very different, in which case I think you'd have a Posse Comitatus challenge. But when you're talking about using the military to secure the border, that literally is national security. I don't really see the issue, but I guess that's me. So I don't know. Maybe you do. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. And by the way, the Bond villains at the World Economic Forum, before I take a break, this makes me very, very happy as well. The Bond villains at the World Economic Forum, the WEF, know they lost to Donald Trump. They say he was buried and dead, but now he has risen and can do whatever he wants. Oh, they're very, very scared over there at Dr. Evil's Volcano Island, cut number one.
Trump has done something no person in the world has ever done before. A dead man, a dead politician, has risen. Somebody who, if we were 4 years ago at Davos, he's buried, dead politically, known to me. He's now returned. This is the greatest comeback in political history of a politician. And then, therefore, he thinks he can do anything.
We need to also factor in not only who's won, which is Trump, but who's lost, which is to say us. And I guess I would add, throw into that, that the epitome of the us who is losing here is Europe. That the European Union and, by and large, its member states have misread the direction where events were going. The causes that it is interested in, climate, human rights, some others, as well as the methods of diplomacy that it prefers, are simply being gradually kind of marginalized as something new, not necessarily something better, but something new moves into the center.
I'm sorry, Bond villains. I'm sorry. And I hope you can get through this. I really, my tears for you. Tears for you, Bond villains. Okay, a lot more to come as we continue along the show here. And we're going to talk about AI with an expert from the Heritage Foundation. The good, the bad, the ugly about artificial intelligence. Let's have the conversation. But first, Emmons Roofing and Siding, they're going to do great work for your home. Hey, how does 10% off sound for you? That's right, 10% off inflation relief discount for each and every one of my listeners. That's true. That's what Emmons will do for you. 10% off roof, siding, Anderson window replacement, doors, and so much more. Emmons even has a bathroom remodeling division. And yes, Emmons remodeled the bathroom in our old home and did a fantastic job. They also did our roof, did our windows. I trust the team at Emmons, and so should you. Matt and Stephanie are great people, great friends of mine personally, and they'll do a great job for you. So reach out to them today by going to emmonsroofing.com, E-M-M-O-N-S. They serve Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and the Jersey Shore. And look, winter's here, and it's brutal. So make sure your home is protected from the elements with the kind of quality craftsmanship that I have come to trust over the course of 10 years in two different homes using Emmons Roofing and Siding. Windows, doors, siding, a lifetime warranty on that roof with the Owens Corning shingle, the best in the business, and 10% off inflation relief discount for each and every one of my listeners, emmonsroofing.com.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Oh, yeah. Big day today. A lot going on. Big announcement yesterday from President Donald Trump on artificial intelligence. What does it all mean for us anyway? What do we want to talk about? We're here to discuss with us as we continue along the show here on a very, very busy Wednesday. I want to welcome to the program Daniel Cochrane. Daniel is Senior Research Associate for the Tech Policy Center at the Heritage Foundation, and he joins us now. Daniel, thanks for making time, and welcome to Philadelphia. How are you doing?
It's awesome to be here.
Awesome to have you, my friend. You sound like you're artificial intelligence by saying that. I'm just going to say that for the record.
I'm a real human. I can vouch for that. Of course, you can't believe that either, because now AI is so advanced it can trick us. But I promise you can take my word for it.
And we can follow you on X at Real D Cochrane. And am I saying your last name right, by the way, Cochrane?
Yeah, you got it right on the first try. Congratulations.
Beautiful. Excellent, excellent. Artificial intelligence. Now, obviously, give us an overview yesterday of what the president announced and some of the key players that were there for the announcement.
Sure. So President Trump announced that SoftBank, which is a very large, essentially investment bank, is going and with partners including Oracle and OpenAI are going to invest a total of $500 billion over a period of, I believe they said, 4 years in building tech infrastructure to support AI. And I think it's critical for listeners to understand, we think of AI as kind of this, like, you know, computer code, right? It's all virtual. But in order for AI to operate, it requires an immense amount of physical infrastructure, and specifically it requires large amounts of data storage capacity and compute power, because all of these large language models, so if your listeners are familiar with, say, ChatGPT, that's kind of one of the bigger ones, or even Meta's Llama, all of these large language models are essentially trained on a ton of data. So that's how they get, that's how they learn, right, to distinguish patterns and make these decisions that we attribute to intelligence. But that requires that you have physical facilities to be able to store and process that data. So essentially, this investment is going toward making that possible on a large scale. I will say, too, I mean, this is what President Trump promised in you know, running for office, is that he would incentivize these kinds of investments. And this is really critical, not just for reindustrializing America, but for winning the AI race with China. So really exciting stuff.
What is China doing as far as AI at this point? And are they ahead of us on this? Are they behind us on this? Where do things stand?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because China has several very large companies. One of them is ByteDance, and ByteDance has been in the news recently because they own TikTok. But ByteDance is also a very large developer in China of AI. They're also they also have several other major companies that have essentially Chinese versions of what, you know, we see here in the U.S., like ChatGPT. They have their own models. And essentially, China has the benefit of essentially spending an immense amount of resources on AI development because of regulations here in the United States, especially around, like, you know, permitting processes for building new infrastructure. We've seen that be a barrier in the past for competing with China. And now President Trump says he's going to use his emergency powers to be able to clear some of those regulatory barriers. And again, that's what China's been doing for years now, as they've been, you know, build, baby, build. You're seeing this in the Gulf states like Saudi Arabia. They're doing this as well. So America, you know, under the Biden administration, has been overregulating and making it difficult to do that sort of thing. So now I'm hoping that we'll catch up in the Trump era.
That's good, because, as we're talking about all of this, obviously, we don't want our enemies to get ahead of us. And at the very same time, we also need to have the energy resources to be able to power our AI. For example, 3 Mile Island in Pennsylvania, right here, coming back online for the purposes of powering artificial intelligence. China won't care about whatever energy it takes to power their AI. We still have to deal with climate change lunatics who might have a problem with that. So let's talk about the energy aspect of this. I mean, I in order for AI to be, You kind of mentioned this earlier, Daniel, for it to really be effective with artificial intelligence and the power needs, what are we talking about here? We're talking about more nuclear reactors probably coming online, for example?
Well, so nuclear, I think, is one of the most efficient ways to solve America's energy crisis in general, but specifically ensure America's competitiveness on AI in particular. And so what's going on with Microsoft investing in 3 Mile Island in Pennsylvania, that's actually a great example of, I think, what the Trump era will enable. Remember that we've had multiple nuclear sites, even in the last 4 years, go offline. I think of my home state of California. We took San Onofre off the grid. And this is really devastating, right? This is devastating in states that need that energy, but it's especially devastating for our high-tech industry that needs the energy to power these models. So I think that nuclear provides, I mean, it's not a matter, I mean, if it were just a matter of efficiency and, you know, doing the smartest thing, we'd be ahead. But as you know, government is not known for its smarts or efficiency. And so we've been really shutting down under the Biden administration. We've been going after nuclear. We've been going after fossil fuels. And that's hurt us in the AI race. So now we've got to work extra hard to get ahead of that.
That's a damn shame that it's hurt us. It really is, Daniel. It's frustrating to hear that. But I guess the upside is that if Microsoft and other tech companies, which are kind of viewed as being on the left, I would think, you know, and I mean, now they're changing their tune as they're trying to kiss up to Trump, but and they're embracing nuclear power. That might be good in terms of getting the American public behind us, because there's no reason why we should not be investing more in nuclear power other than it gets a bad rap.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's critical to understand nuclear is a largely clean source of energy. It's highly efficient, and it's something that we should be tapping for our energy needs, especially around AI. It's something that could rapidly accelerate economic and industrial development here in the United States. So it's something that we have now the opportunity to prioritize, and by essentially using executive powers to grant exemptions from some of these, you know, onerous environmental regulations on the federal and in some cases state level, we can really, I think, level the playing field for American companies that are trying to reindustrialize and grow their companies here in the United States. That's part of I think if you want to zoom out a little bit, that's part of rebalancing our position relative to China. That's the larger game being played, and nuclear is certainly a critical part of that.
How much of artificial intelligence are we using on a day-to-day basis, just in our everyday lives? I mean, obviously, there's the one aspect of, like, purposely going on, say, ChatGPT and writing a term paper or writing a love letter or something like that. But just how much in our daily lives are we using AI and we don't even realize it?
Well, I think one way to quantify it would be to consider how much data has been used to train these large language models. And essentially, as Elon Musk and other leaders have noted, we've essentially used the entire internet's worth of data. So that's everything we produced. And it's not just the content, but it's all of the quote-unquote exhaust. When you click on something, when you interact with something online, all of that information has been essentially used to train these large language models. So that is, you know, we're talking literally the whole information, a ocean of information that has been poured into these models, and they need more to continue to train them. So I think that is it gives you an idea of kind of just the scale we're talking about here. In terms of the use, I think, you know, we think of AI largely in terms of, I go to ChatGPT and I ask it a question. That is certainly one application, but I think the more important application is the ways in which you can customize a large language model for a particular purpose. So an example is, a small business uses ChatGPT or Llama or Gemini, which is Google's model, or some of the smaller ones like Claude, to essentially fulfill certain tasks. So say you're a small business, you want an AI to manage your back office operations. You want an AI to answer, you know, emails. Like those are, I think, in the next 2 years, we'll really see that as the value proposition of AI and really giving American companies an edge in the global marketplace. So that I think is, like, you have the direct, we'll call it, you know, consumer-facing application, but then you have the business application, which I think is really substantial, and it's something we're just beginning to tap into.
And last question, Daniel, what is it about AI that we should fear, if anything?
Well, I think actually what you should fear is that we end up entrenching a handful of very powerful tech companies to control the development and governance of this technology. Because as we saw with social media in the early days, social media started out as a very competitive, in a very competitive environment where you had a lot of small platforms, vying for users' attention. And then we got to a place where only a handful of large tech platforms controlled the whole space. I think the danger of that sort of reoccurring with AI is sort of not, I think it's actually there's a bigger danger, and the implications are far greater because of how integrated AI will be in our society. So I think the lock-in of large tech players, the centralization of power, that's a real fear, and it's something that the incoming administration needs to take seriously.
Daniel Cochran, Heritage Foundation, thank you, my friend, for making a very complicated subject something that we can all understand. We appreciate it.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
That is the big story of the hour, brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Veneria. It's not too late to get the beautiful smile you deserve to start the new year, and smile a lot for 2025. Get your free implant consultation, teeth whitening, whatever you need, with my buddy Dr. Mike Veneria. VeneriaDental.com. Make your appointment today. A couple other things I wanted to share with you from the audio perspective as we continue along the show here today. And and thank you for being here. By the way, you can follow along on X at Rich Zeoli, Instagram at Zeoli Show. You can always follow along there as well. Danish politician telling President Trump that Greenland is not for sale. First of all, everything is for sale. But a Danish member of the European Parliament had some choice words for President Donald Trump. I hope he doesn't throw the cookie tin at his head. Cut number 8.
Listen very carefully. Greenland has been part of the Danish kingdom for 800 years. It's an integrated part of our country. It is not for sale. Let me put it in words you might understand. Mr. Trump, f*** off.
It is not okay in this house of democracy. Thank you. Regardless of what we think of Mr. Trump, it is not possible to use such language.
Okay. Well, you know, cool it, Big Dane. All right? Cool it, big guy. This is not the WWE. But if it was the WWE, you can definitely use that kind of language. Hulk Hogan, who is a big part of the inauguration and the Republican National Convention, thanks to me suggesting it to Linda McMahon. Hulk Hogan was on with Jesse Waters talking about John Fetterman switching parties potentially, which John Fetterman, of course, says he's not going to do. But if he did join the WWE, you know what his name would be. First of all, he'd be a villain, and he would go by Fetter Person. Cut number 10.
Block in America's future, man. I can't believe it.
We're actually hearing rumors, and I think you like this Democrat. Fetterman might actually switch parties, we're hearing. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's something that's been kicked around a little bit today.
Well, if Fetterman doesn't switch parties, I know some place called the WWE that he could be great at, brother, just as long as he keeps that hoodie on.
There you go. I'd like to see him wrestle Matt DeSantis. What do you think? Could he be effective as a wrestler? Damn right.
He's certainly large enough.
Now, who is this Lauren Sanchez woman who was at the inaugural that everybody was staring at her? her
Jeff. Yeah, she was wearing clothing or attire. Not even sure it is clothing. It looked like it might be underwear. She was in attire that was perhaps a bit inappropriate for the inauguration.
There's a lot of cleavage there, and there were a lot of Amazon Prime jokes about that. Like, did he get that delivered to him in an hour? Was it overnight delivery? Megyn Kelly, let's cue up cut number 11. Megyn Kelly wasn't having any of it. If you have not seen the picture of Lauren Sanchez, first of all, she looks well endowed. The only question I have is, are they real and are they spectacular? That's the only question I have as I was looking at her. What do you think? Real or not real,
no.
Matt DeSantis?
No chance.
No,
no
way, right?
Chance they're real. I think she's had quite a bit of plastic surgery.
Yeah, she looks very phony. Justin, what do you think? Real or fugazi? Tatas, what do you think?
They're about as real as how real the 2020 election was. I will put it that way.
Boom, look at you. I love it. Boom, tying those two things together. Love it. Oh, by the way, some breaking news that President Trump has designated the Houthis as a foreign terrorist organization. Something that we will be able to chat about with our buddy, Dr. Victoria Coates. He's also announced today that Ansar Allah will be designated as a foreign terrorist organization. And he's given an executive grant of clemency for a person known as Andrew Zabofsky. I'll tell you a little bit about that and another clemency he issued at the 6 o'clock hour. But here's Megyn Kelly, cut number 11.
Jeff Bezos runs the Washington Post, owns it, and owns Amazon, of course. And I will tell you, this is not my first time saying she dresses like a hooker, because she does. And we called out, we had to call deal with some Hollywood PR firm. I can't remember who we were trying to get, but we tried to avoid those people, but sometimes you can't. And this PR agent went off on our booker. Mm-hmm. They're so angry because they represent her or they do some business with her. And she had, you know, talked to them, whatever. It's mm-hmm. like those two don't like to be made fun of.
Yep.
He's done a lot to change his look. He looks nothing like he looked 20 years ago. I don't think she's seen a doctor. She doesn't want to go under the scalp. I mean, you tell me. That's not natural.
No.
And that's fine if that's your choice, but have some dignity and some respect for your setting in your circumstances. No one should be talking about your sorry. They should be talking about the inauguration.
I'll have to say that there was a viral thing. Mark Zuckerberg was caught checking her out. And Clay Travis tweeted out this meme of that, and it said, boobs are back, is what Clay Travis, this is why, you know, I don't endorse that, by the way, but. And, like, you know. We're so back, as Mark Zuckerberg was caught checking her out. And then he went on Instagram and liked a lot of her posts. So, and then I got into this whole conversation with my friends yesterday. We have this little text chain called Poor Decisions, P-O-U-R Decisions. And there was a debate about this. My one friend who's on the chain, she was incensed over how much work this Lauren Sanchez has had with the lips and the cheeks and the boobs and the eyes and all of it. And how phony she looks. And I got to say, she does kind of have that duck face thing going. You know what I mean? As I look at it. Not to be petty, Matt, but I'm just saying. So.
Yeah, she clearly had a lot of work done. And by the way, Zuckerberg kind of, you know, sneaking a peek with his wife sitting right next to him.
That's right. As real as the 2020 election, Justin. Those tatas.
Also about as real as her love for Jeff Bezos.
Well played. Yeah, well played. If Jeff Bezos was Jeff Smith and was just a guy who shopped incessantly on Amazon.com, I don't think she'd be with him. Call me crazy.
You don't think the $240 billion net worth helps?
Have you ever seen Jeff Bezos' yacht? He has several of them. But I think one of them is it's gigantic. It's like the guy's yacht in Wolf of Wall Street. I mean, it's got helicopters on it, and it's got multiple swimming pools. He's a rich, rich dude, Jeff Bezos. And yes, he owns the Washington Post as well.
It's that yacht, by the way, is valued at $500 million, I believe. It's over 400 feet long.
For a freaking boat.
Yeah.
That's it? Only half a bill?
Just half a bill. Pocket change.
Just $500 million, you know. But could you imagine me trying to dock that thing? Oh, my God. I mean, I broke my ribs climbing on the back of a pontoon boat. Could you imagine me trying to dock that pontoon, that 400-foot yacht, super yacht by Jeff Bezos? I don't think it'll happen. All right, listen, we got a big fourth and final hour coming up straight ahead for you on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Thank you for streaming on YouTube. This will conclude the streaming portion of the program. But don't go away. We got lots more to go. Thank you.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.